Welcome to A Frugal Athlete Podcast, where we interview athletes, both current and former, on the prudent financial practices and smart career decisions they are making. In these episodes, we dive into what it means to be a frugal athlete. You might think that frugal just means being cheap, but as you will soon learn, being frugal is more complex than that. Hey, what's up, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome to another episode of A Frugal Athlete Podcast. Today we got a very special guest, someone who I recently met, but he is a game changer in the sports business landscape, whether it's telling stories in a former life and now helping athletes with their money management across taxes. So we got James Walker today. He is the director of sports and entertainment for the CPAs. Had the pleasure of meeting him at the Bloomberg conference and immediately hit it off. And James, thank you so much for joining us. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Amobi. Happy to be here, man. And just happy to talk shop, man. We, like you said, we hit it off right away at the Bloomberg conference. So it was like we've been friends for 5 or 10 years, even though we just met each other for 5 or 10 minutes. So it was all good.
And to speak to your expertise, if you're not watching on YouTube, this is an audio podcast as well. James has the whole setup. He got the mic, he got the headphones, he got the background. So before we get into what you do now, give us a history lesson of what you did in a prior life.
Yeah, so I was a longtime sports reporter. Worked 17 years as a sports writer, a sports reporter. Did a ton of writing. Did some television, some radio. Worked a decade at ESPN from 2008 to 2018. It was all I ever really wanted to do. Really, since I would say maybe sophomore year of high school, I was just one of those kids that just knew right away what I wanted to do. Like you, I played sports. As a youth, but unlike you, I knew in high school that I wasn't going to make it too far, where you made it all the way to the professional level. I knew it about 14, 15 when I'm looking around like, okay, there's a lot of kids here that are bigger than me, stronger than me, faster than me. I better figure something out. So I kind of turned my love into sports, into something that I was naturally talented in, which was writing. So I kind of honed that craft. And back when I graduated from Temple University in 2001, so it's been a minute, everyone was specialized. You were either a writer, a radio person, or a television personality. Now, 20 plus years later, it's all jumbled in. And I kind of went through the career arc to where I would say probably around 2007, 2008 or so, when everything started to cross over. PTI was like a big turning point with that, where you had Michael Wilbon and Tony Kornheiser, who were noted, celebrated Hall of Fame writers. All of a sudden they were on TV every day. Yeah. And they kind of set that standard to where, you could cross over. And so that's kind of where my goals ended up changing a little bit. I was always a writer at heart. That was always kind of my foundation, even until the end of my career. But at that point, especially when I arrived at ESPN, I started to do, more television work, more radio work over the span of my last 10 years of my career. To where I ended up doing a little bit of everything. But that's kind of what I did in my former life. Really didn't know that I was going to transition, but things started happening. I'm sure we'll get into it a little later to where I kind of felt that was the right move. And it's been a great run.
No, most definitely. And what I love about your story, you talk about the crossover and identifying what you were good at and how you translate it into sports. Obviously, not everyone's going to be a professional athlete, but there's so many different ways to get into the sports business realm. So what advice would you have for someone that's looking to get into sports the way you did as a journalist and, sports reporter? And I know, as we're going to get into, a business development expert as well.
Yeah, I would say self-scout. It's a very underrated thing that people don't really talk about, even in sports, really, but in life. Like, know yourself, self-scout, know your strengths, know your weaknesses, know what skills you have that are transferable. And, fortunately for me, I kind of have always kind of been in tune with who I was and what my strengths were. And I kind of learned early on and always kind of honed on that. Now, I'm big on focusing on what makes you big, not what makes you small. If I try to go and outside right now and go try to fix my car and go under a hood and not knowing anything about cars and what I'm doing, I'm going to feel this big. I'm going to feel tiny. I'm going to feel like I have no talent at all. I cannot fix this motor or, whatever I'm trying to do, fixing a car. But if I keep focusing on the things that I know that I'm good at and what my transferable skills are, people skills, communication, writing ability, you know, being able to you know, have a conversation with many different people from all walks of life, all those kind of things, great on deadline, all the certain things that I've learned over the course of my life that I can transfer that anywhere. I could transfer that in any aspect of business. I can transfer that as a reporter. I could transfer that in really whatever field you go in. So I would say learn to self-scout, know who you are, know what your strengths are. And then once you kind of identify that, then you can kind of pinpoint what field you want to go into, and you can make a career transition, you know, fairly much more easy. It's not easy, but much more easier than you would if you just, you're just kind of blindly doing it, not really knowing, you know, where your strengths really lie.
No, I love that. There's a lot of actionable advice that people can take from that. And before we get into what you're doing now, I want to ask you, because you've told countless stories, you won awards, you've, you know, been in front of plenty of different stages. When you were telling stories on athletes, what are some highlights of these athletes that made them, you know, successful from a brand perspective? Was it, you know, good public speaking? Was it having, like, you know, the ability to self-scout, like storytelling? What are some things that you look for when, you know, I want to interview that athlete versus I can probably skip that one.
Yeah, you know, a lot of it is just being personable. You know, it's you know, you can have a great story, but if you don't care to tell it, don't want to tell it, don't really care for the reporter or, you know, whatever the reason may be, it, you know, no one's really going to be able to tell a good story. You know, I don't know 100% of anyone's story, but if someone is good at telling that story and being personable enough to share it with you, especially if it's like a vulnerable story, which is kind of tough, you know, someone might have a rough childhood and things like that, then those are really the best stories. And that can come from anybody. That can come from the last guy on the bench or the superstar player on the team. You know, everybody has a different story, but not everybody is personable enough to share that story or vulnerable enough to share that kind of story. So, you know, I've always kind of, you know, and being in locker rooms have really helped me. And you know this on the sports side. You know, being in locker rooms, this athletes are from all different regions, all different walks of life. And I'm always curious, even if I'm not writing a story about that athlete, you know, what is their background? You know, who are they and what they're about? And then you kind of just kind of feel who you vibe with from there. And kind of, you're not going to vibe with everybody. Everybody's not going to like you. You're not necessarily going to like everybody, but you know, for the majority, if you're a good high character person, you know, you're going to get along with most people on the team. And so that's kind of how I kind of went about it. I just kind of got to know guys, you know, just over the years. And sometimes I wrote stories about them, sometimes I didn't, but those are the times where I really got into the deeper part of the stories and also hearing from family members and stuff like that on different things. And that in turn really helped me break news because there was a level of trust there, you know, to where I wasn't just kind of a fly by night reporter to stop by and say, hey, can you, you know, help me out in this story? I'm trying to get the news on whether so-and-so is going to play or not. You know, I, you know, talked to them over months, sometimes over years, to where you kind of developed that trust, whether it was on the record or off the record, that eventually helped, you know, with breaking news. And I would say, like Adam Schefter, those guys are absolutely amazing. Breaking news to me, and I would think most reporters would say, is the hardest thing to do as a sports reporter. I mean, you're literally trying to beat every reporter in the world on that one story. And so there's a rush that kind of comes with that to be the first person in the entire world, entire country to report on that. So it's really tough to do, but that's, you know, that's how, you know, a lot of reporters kind of stay at that top level. It really separates the, you know, top level people from the non-top level people.
No, and I love that you said that, because when we spoke offline, we had a great conversation talking about the similarities between, you know, professional sports and then professional reporting. And obviously you've made the transition where you could have kept going. You know, you've reached a pinnacle. You've won countless awards. You're well known, even though you're humble, and I wouldn't have known when I first met you. What was it like to make that transition?
You know, it's interesting because I was going into an unknown to where I was at the top level of my industry, and I'm going into an industry to where I didn't really know that much about. So I think that disparity kind of caused, you know, some caution with that. To where, I mean, I pay my taxes every year. I knew that much about taxes, but I wasn't an expert in taxes, where in the sports reporting field, I was at ESPN. I'm in the top, you know, 5 to 10%, you know, of my field. So there was some concern with there. And as well, I had to really, and it's going to be, I'm going to try to explain it. I'm trying to dig into myself to kind of explain my feelings at the time. I had to really examine my ego. And where my ego was with that, to where I got used to being on television. You know, I got used to being on national radio. I got used to having people, you know, read my stories nationally and walking into an NFL stadium and people saying, hey, James Walker, I read your story. Great, you know, great stuff, blah, blah, blah. I kind of had to check my ego and say, hey, am I okay with not hearing that anymore? And I would assume from the athlete side, you guys have that tenfold where you're in a stadium, they're cheering your every kick, they're cheering your every score, your every touchdown, whatever sport, your every basket, whatever sport you're in. And then that goes away, you know, so I kind of realized that from a much, much, much smaller side than you guys on the professional athlete side. But just from a media side, like, am I OK with not being on TV anymore ever again, potentially, you know, or not having anyone say, hey, James, that was a great story. I read your story, blah, blah, blah. And so I had to kind of come to grips with that. Like, is that important to me? Is that important to my ego or the other things that I'm getting on the other side to where I'm getting a lot of my time back? I'm getting to be able to raise a family. I'm getting a more structured schedule to where as I'm getting older now, I could become the dad that I want to be, the father that I want to be, and still have a great career. You know, I kind of had to make sure the things that I'm getting back, you know, on that side, that I can handle from an ego standpoint, because as much as we say, we all have an ego, you know, some are bigger than others. Some are, you know, some are smaller than others, but we all inside kind of, you know, have an ego to feed. So I had to kind of check that at the door and make sure that when I make that transition, I'm going to be okay with that. So I was at least mindful enough to kind of go through those thoughts as I was going through that process and kind of realize that, yeah, I can handle that. You know, that part will be fine. And especially kind of doing something that I've done my entire adult life. Can I give that up and do something different? So I kind of looked at it as a new challenge. So I had all those things. I know it sounds jumbled because at the time it was jumbled. I was kind of going through all those things in my mind at the same time and whether or not I can handle it. But yeah, I kind of went through those processes early before I made that decision, you know, to do it. And it's worked out even better than I can imagine.
No, that's amazing. And I definitely took some advice from you when we had our conversation. But would you mind sharing, like, you know, you talked about building out the processes and coming to terms with, all right, I'm going to a new field, you know, it's no more big fish, small pond. I'm going to be small fish in a big pond, in a whole new realm. So what are some ways and how did you come across the identity process of, all right, this is the field that I want to go in. I know I want these things. I know how to identify myself, but this is the field I want to go in. I want to stay in sports and go from there.
This week's episode of A Frugal Athlete Podcast is brought to you by The Shift Group. Shift Group is turning athletes into sales professionals. Is your company looking to hire driven, competitive former athletes? Are you a former college or pro athlete in any sport and trying to figure out what's next? Consider a meaningful career in technology sales and let The Shift Group guide your every step of the way. Reach out to www.shiftgroup.io or email them directly at jr@shiftgroup.io. Shift Group specializes in helping former athletes unlock the lucrative career of software sales by leveraging their characteristics of focus, discipline, coachability, competitiveness, and work ethic with a unique one-to-one approach to the hiring process with dozens of software companies looking to hire athletes specifically. Let me tell you guys firsthand, you know, I looked into software sales as a post-career opportunity. Shift Group does that. They take you through the whole process. They let you know the ins and outs, the competitive advantage, the transitional skills that you need from an athletic base to help you in software sales. And it's one of the few jobs that helps you find that next game that gives you that same like kind of like dopamine feeling that you have from sports. So highly recommend Shift Group. JR is a great guy. He's going to get you sorted. So make sure you check him out at www.shiftgroup.io or email them directly at jr@shiftgroup.io.
Yeah, the first thing that I did was I realized that I wanted to get out of the field that I was in. And it was because my life, the life that I was living was a young man's game, young woman's game, young person's game. And, you know, traveling every other weekend to a different NFL game, you know, working year round the clock, getting calls at 11 at night that somebody got arrested and you had to write, you know, stuff like that is all cool when you're in your 20s and, you know, in your early 30s. But as I was getting older and you know, I have two kids now and a family, I didn't want to, you know, do that part of it, you know, anymore. There were parts of it that I loved and still wanted to do. But as I got older, those parts became less attracted to me. And in terms of the sports reporting market, and it wasn't the same, the field wasn't the same as when I got in terms of being more sensationalized and all that kind of stuff. And newspapers that no longer exist and, you know, jobs were done. So I'm still relatively young. I didn't want to navigate that for another 25 years. And on top of that, my family life was changing to where I felt I needed to adjust. So the first thing is I had to identify that I wanted to, you know, transition. I did that even before I knew what it looked like in my mind. I made that decision. Okay, I want to transition. I don't know what it looks like. And this is what I told some people, some connections that I had. Actually reached out to some connections I had in the finance world and said, hey, I don't know what it looks like, but I want to make a transition out of sports journalism. You know, and I kind of talked it through with several people that I trust. And it led me in two different directions. I had a business development offer on the finance side, and I had a business development offer on the accounting side. And for me in the finance side, you know, and I actually knew more about finance because, you know, you have stocks and things like that. So you kind of follow certain things than the tax side. I didn't know as much there. But from a business development standpoint, there's too much gray area in finance for me. You know, if I'm trying to have if I have a relationship with an athlete and I'm trying to bring their business into my firm, maybe they get 10% return on that year. Maybe they lose 10% return on that year. Maybe, you know, maybe they break even. It was too much gray area versus if I'm doing business development for an accounting firm, we execute the service. You pay the transaction fee and that's the transaction. You know, we do your taxes and that's sort of transaction. There's no black and white, to where, you know, it could be anything can go sideways in that respect. So that kind of helped me make my decision. And especially, my now boss, his name is Howard Krant at Adeptus CPAs. He founded the firm about 35 years ago. He was very forward thinking in creating a position. We didn't have a business development position before I got there. He created that position for me. And he actually flew down to South Florida two times. We talked it over of what the position could look like. And we both kind of shared ideas and kind of created that position together. So I kind of felt there was more involvement in terms of creating that position. And then I just had to perform. So I was always confident that I can, you know, that I can perform and have enough transferable skills to make it happen. There was some doubt because it was a new field. But that's kind of the whole process of how it came down. But I felt more comfortable on the tax side than the financial side of doing business development, even though I had an opportunity to kind of go either route in that respect.
No, that's amazing. So let's get right into it. Taxes. At the time of this recording, it is February 28th. It's going to get, we're in tax season right now.
Yeah, yes.
I like to say that tax season is year round, but we're in tax season right now. So give us the rundown. You know, obviously athletes, when it comes to taxes, it's a whole different ballgame. So what does Adeptus does, and specifically with your position, how are you helping, provide the most services for your athletes and entertainers? Yep.
So Adeptus CPAs, as I mentioned, we've been in business for about 35 years. I've been at the firm for 4 years as head of director of sports and entertainment. So I work mostly with the athletes and entertainment clients. I'm the liaison between. I'm not the CPA that crunches the numbers. We have about 55, 60 people behind the curtain that does that. But I'm the person that communicates with the families and communicates with the athletes and the parents and brings in the business, make sure the forms are signed. You know, all those kind of things, answers any questions that need to be answered on the fly. Athletes, as you know, you guys are in season. You guys only have a certain amount of window of time to communicate about things like taxes, which probably bore most people anyway. So I'm the person to make sure I'm available at pretty much any hour of the day to answer those questions. But taxes for athletes, two things you got to know. One, pretty much every financial decision that you make should have some level of thought with the tax component involved. Whether you are making an investment that may have a big exit, if you get a big exit to where it could be capital gains or a big tax event like that, there's heavy taxes involved. Anything, if you're investing in crypto now, which is a hot thing, pretty much any financial decision that you make, marriage, there's taxes involved, your tax situation changes. If you get a raise, a big signing bonus, a particular year, that's a big tax event. That pretty much everything should be a tax component. And something that I didn't know coming into the business that I realized, in my 4 years so far is there's really not a high level of literacy when it comes to taxes in the athlete, community. I think most athletes focus on making the money, But they don't necessarily focus as much on keeping the money. And you know, keeping it from the government is a big part of it. You know, if you make if you make $1 million, the government's going to come for about 40-50% of that. You know, and how do you keep as much of that, you know, 400,000-500,000 that you would give to the government, you know, as you can. You need a trained CPA. It's not something that you could just go on TurboTax and true story. I mean, we've had athletes that, you know, have done, you know, stuff like H&R Block at the mall and TurboTax and stuff. And they come to us saying, hey, you know, look, you know, we screwed up and, you know, we lost a bunch of money with this. We should have had this and XYZ. A lot of our jobs, a lot of our referrals actually come from cleanup jobs. And we always tell them that, hey, it's cheaper to just do it right the first time, you know, than to come to us and have us have to go back 2 or 3 years to clean up, you know, a bunch of stuff, and we have to charge for that, and then obviously get it right, you know, in year three. So yeah, I don't even know if I answered the question. That's a long-winded way of saying, you know, with professional athletes especially, I think there needs to be a larger focus. And this is a big part of my job, is to have a larger focus of literacy and education on the tax component, you know, of things, because most of you guys are in the highest tax bracket. You know, pretty much anyone that makes over $400,000 a year, you know, $450,000 a year is going to be in the highest tax bracket. And so, you know, you guys need to know certain strategies of how to maintain things, you know, how to maintain your income as much as possible.
No, I love that. You know, it's expensive to be cheap. And, you know, if you're trying to do it the cheap way, no disrespect, it is going to cost you in the long run.
Every time, especially in my business, I see it all the time. People try to, you know, get away with just, you know, doing TurboTax themselves or going to H&R Block. I shouldn't even mention other companies. I shouldn't do that. But going to other companies and try to pay a couple $100, it's just better. Look, just suck it up, pay the $600-$700 fee, whatever, you know, to get it done professionally at a high level. And it'll save you thousands of dollars. Like we always tell the people, we're most likely going to save you a ton more than what our fees are going to charge. So it's just better to do it right the first time.
Most definitely. I think every athlete in some way, shape, or form has had trouble with taxes. And you talk about it. There's a lack of literacy. You know, we talk about financial literacy, but there's a lack of literacy when it comes specific to taxes. Yeah. So what are some initial things that athletes can like learn? Obviously, you got to work with the expert in the space, but what are some things that they can learn on their own? Simple things that they can apply to their own financial playbook.
Yeah, I think the first thing is just understanding the tax bracket, you know, understanding the tax brackets and what bracket that you're in, because then that kind of sets the level of expectation. OK, if I'm making $100,000 a year, I'm in this tax bracket. If I'm making $400,000 a year, 500, a million, 2 million, 3 million, I'm in this level of tax bracket, you know, taxation. So understanding that, I think it's just a very basic, good level start. And then start realizing the states and the provinces that you're in. If you live in Florida, hey, like me, you don't pay any state income tax. If you live in California, hey, you're going to come out 13.3% of your income. I mentioned that, as I know you're out there in California. So 13.3% of your income is going to go to the state of California. And that's not even including the federal tax and depending on what bracket you're in. So just kind of knowing the certain, you know, where you are, you don't even have to know every single state or whatever, just know where you are and what your, you know, what your income, you know, tax bracket is and what the state level is. I think is a good start to kind of understanding. Cause you know, look, even me, I've been around this expertise for 4 years and I'm still learning every single day. I'm by no means an expert, you know, on taxes, but I'm soaking up game in terms of, you know, how a lot of people get ahead and trust me, man, at the highest levels, and I'm saying beyond athlete levels, I'm saying executive levels, like the team owners, you know, like there's super high levels. Yes, there's levels to it. And trust me, they understand the tax game. They understand how to save as much money with the tax code. And tax codes can change really with each president. You know, every 4 years, if you have a Republican president or a Democratic president, not that this is a political thing, but certain tax codes change, you know, can change every 4 to 8 years. So you have to have, you know, a professional that's really on top of it and all the tax code changes, because there's, you know, there's certain loopholes and things that you can do, you know, to really, you know, keep as much money as you can. And there's a reason why companies like Amazon don't pay as much taxes as, you know, a lot of people feel they should. It's because they have the best, you know, tax professionals that really know how to utilize things to the fullest ability.
No, that's what it's all about. You know, you got to be efficient. Use, like you said, use the resources to the fullest ability. When it comes to, you know, your specific position, you brought up a great point, because there's all these acronyms, there's all these legalities, there's all these changes, and the average athlete doesn't have the time to learn about it or to ask the right questions or to get everyone else involved. So with your position specifically, can you talk about that process of like, all right, sitting them down, you know, getting in front of them, making sure they're like up to speed on some deadlines, and, you know, providing that literacy that not a lot of other services or other companies do?
Yeah, you know, one of the biggest advantages that I've had, and this is something I didn't consider coming in either, is I can communicate to an athlete at a novice level, because really I was that novice, you know, four years ago. And not that I'm an expert now, I'm probably a little better than a novice at this point, but I can communicate to them at a level that I know that they were, because I was in their same shoes 4 years ago, to where I didn't really know much, you know, about the title. So that's actually been an advantage to me and not a disadvantage. Now, when it comes to certain high level stuff and high level tax strategies, I rely on the experts. I don't give tax advice. I answer questions that are asked of me. I break down certain things to families as far as what we do and how we can help. But you know, a lot of times I have, you know, a partner from our firm on the phone with me, or, you know, my boss Howard Krant on the phone with me, or a CPA on the phone with me while I'm talking to these athletes, in case there's questions that I cannot answer. And, you know, you spoke of making the transition. That was something that I had to kind of examine with myself too, is being able to say, I don't know. You know, in my field previously, where I felt I was an expert at the particular team, NFL team that I covered, or the league that I covered, things like that, it's rare that I said, I don't know. And now, you know, there comes in the tax world where, you know, there are some questions that I just simply can't answer. I have to refer to our, you know, to our experts and our CPAs to, you know, to answer those questions. And, you know, I learned to be comfortable with that. And I think that's actually helped, because people want honesty, you know. So if I'm speaking to an athlete and they, you know, ask me, say, hey, I have a car that I lease on Turo, and, you know, what's the tax advantages to that? And then I could say, hey, you know what, let me check with CPA. I can get you that answer in, you know, 10 minutes or something like that. As opposed to just, you know, kind of, you know, saying something that I'm not really sure of. I have no problem saying, I don't know, and I can, you know, get the professional advice to them, and they appreciate that.
Now, that's sound advice for athletes, because, like you said, we're at an elite level, but sometimes that doesn't translate over to other sectors of our personal portfolio. So to have the humility to ask questions, to be curious, to understand that, okay, maybe I don't know, but I can learn, is a benefit not only for yourself, but to the people that you work with, in this case, with you as a tax helper. So with that being said, you talked about Turo, and obviously athletes, entrepreneurs, investing. You mentioned crypto earlier. You mentioned other vehicles of making extra money. Do you guys sit down with them beforehand when it comes to taxes? Like, all right, if you do this, great opportunity, but this is how it might affect your taxes moving forward.
Sometimes it really depends. You know, people are going to do what they want to do. You know what I mean? To where if they want to, you know, lease their car on Turo, they're going to lease their car on Turo, and they're not necessarily thinking about the tax implications beforehand. Now, come tax time, they're going to come to us and say, hey, you know, we leased a car, we made this amount of money. What's the tax implications? What can we do? So it depends. You know, some of the more astute athletes, you know, they'll astute athletes with their business team, they'll come to us and say, hey, can we do a quarterly review of certain things, because things change? They might have made a VC investment, you know, that's coming up, that might have an exit, and they want to kind of examine what's the best way to set it up, you know, for capital gains or something like that. So it really depends. It comes in all shapes and sizes in terms of, you know, communication levels, things like that. There's some, you know, some athletes that, in some teams that, you know, we may not communicate with them, but every, I don't know, 5 or 6 months, and some that we may communicate with every 2 weeks, depending on how busy and what their situations are. But, you know, we make sure we stay on top of things as much as we can. And, you know, come tax time, we, you know, we're able to do the work as expertly as possible.
No, that's amazing. You've dealt with athletes, you know, across the board for over, you know, 20 years now, you know, across taxes, across sports stories. What makes, in your opinion, an athlete successful when it comes to the whole encompassing journey, not just on the field, but off the field as well?
Yeah. Wow. That's a tough one. I'm trying to think of what, you know, as far as just overall, what are the general qualities that I've seen in the successful ones? It's going to sound weird, but the ones that are able to delegate.
Oh, that makes sense.
I found to be the most overall successful. Like if you look at a person like Tom Brady, you know, for example, there's no way Tom Brady knows everything about all the things that he's doing. You know, he's running TB12. He's big in the crypto space. He's an expert at football. You know, that's kind of what he has his focus on, and be the best quarterback of all time. You know, there's no way you can be that level of an athlete and that dedicated to your craft and still have everything so airtight in your business on the outside without being able to delegate and choose the right people around you. Because really, I mean, I would say that's the one quality that I see in nearly all the highly, highly successful people, is that they're able, they have the eye to choose the right people and to see the talented people in the different fields and who's trustworthy. And they're able to delegate to let those people run it. And they make the final decision, obviously, but they're able to run it to where they're also able to have that you know, that freedom of a burden to focus on their craft. You know, they're not worried about, you know, X, Y, Z, all this stuff off the field, because, you know, all that's taken care of. And Tom Brady can focus on, you know, his film study and being the best possible athlete, you know, on the field. So that's one quality. I would say focus. I mean, focus is another thing too. You know, sometimes when you have five or six different things going at the same time, you really don't get anything done. But I think there's certain people, successful people I've seen, able to compartmentalize. And they may be compartmentalizing the same day. They might say, you know what, for this hour, I'm going to compartmentalize and put my 100% focus on this particular thing, whether it's a business or you know, their craft and being an athlete. I would say focus, being able to compartmentalize, and the ability to delegate are some not so obvious features, you know, features that I've seen in highly successful athletes.
No, that's amazing. I think it definitely makes sense across the board. You see the biggest athletes, whether they made it big in their professional space, but they know how to delegate, they know how to build the right team. And obviously with your experience, you know how to ask the right questions. Like, that's your profession. What are some questions, you know, when working with somebody, let's take it, for example, when you want to work with a CPA, that we should be asking as athletes to, you know, get them past the trust test, you know, understand if they're good or not, understand if they can help us with our personal specific situations. What are some questions that we need to ask, like, right off the bat?
You know, the first thing, and it's not even a question, it's just getting to know the person. Because I've learned this in business over 4 years. It's I want to work with people that I like. I'm at the point in my life now to where I don't want to work with people that I dislike or don't trust or have questions about, or, you know, just for whatever reason. So I would say, as an athlete, and look, we're a CPA firm. We've been in business for over 35 years, but we're not the only good CPA firm. There's plenty of other good CPA firms. There's plenty of other good financial institutions and, you know, investment people, VC people, all those things. You got to pass the character test first. You know, if I'm an athlete, if I'm in their shoes, and even me on the other side, on the business side, to where, like, I don't have the want to just work with people I don't like anymore. And if I am on their side, to where I'm the CEO, because pretty much each athlete is the CEO of their company. It doesn't matter if you make, you know, 100,000 or 100 million a year, whatever it is. I mean, you're your own CEO of that, you know, of your particular brand and your particular business. So make sure everybody passed the character test and everybody is, you know, likable enough to work with, because, you know, that gets in the way of everything. If it doesn't matter if they're good at what they do or, you know, whatever, if you don't get along with the person, it's just
not going to work.
Yeah. It's just not going to work. It's not in the athlete space. And I want people to realize too, in the audience, is that the athlete space is different from every other space. The athlete and entertainment space, I would say, is different from every other space. It's not a balanced relationship. And I'm just being honest here, you know, where, you know, look, we do 6,000 tax returns a year. So we have clients in retail, clients in fashion, clients in, you know, all over e-commerce, all this kind of stuff. And so with athletes, you may be seeking a signature, and it might take 2 weeks to get that signature, you know, for whatever reason, something that takes 2 seconds. It might take 2 weeks, you know, it's just what it is. But if they need something from you, they don't expect, you know, they expect it in 2 seconds. You know what I mean? It's not a balance.
Calling this out right now?
It is what it is, man. Like I'm just speaking real on that. Right. So it's not a balanced relationship. And we understand that. And that's my job to understand that, you know, in the business development side, but you know, like that kind of in a roundabout way, kind of answer your question in terms of if I'm on their side, if I'm on the athlete side, you know, like I want to deal with people that, you know, that I like. Everybody, you know, there's a lot of good people in every field in terms of what they can do, but you know, not everybody is easy to get along with or personable enough to where, you know, you can deal with that. Because really, you know, with athlete relationship, I mean, there's some frustrations, you know, there's some frustrations with that imbalanced relationship, and you got to have enough patience, enough character to deal with that. And I think that was one of the things, the hidden gems that kind of helped me, because I've dealt with athletes 17 years prior before I got into the business side. So it doesn't surprise me, you know, that this imbalanced relationship, to where if I had never dealt with athletes before, I'd be like, why does it take so long just to get, you know, so I'd be like highly frustrated. And then when they need something, they're texting me at 10 at night, you know, 11 at night, waking me up and needing something, like, hey, this doesn't make sense, you know, but in the athlete and entertainment world, it does make sense. That's just what it is.
No, that's sound advice, and it's true. I can speak to that, you know, as an athlete. That's just
answer that. Why is that? I'm gonna ask you the questions now.
I don't know. I think from the standpoint of athletes are used to being pampered. So, and like from the standpoint of like logistics, that's usually handled by like an agent or something like that. So for them to be proactive about their own personal stuff, it takes a while. So that's why when it comes to businesses, people want to work with athletes that are proactive, that are astute, that have, you know, the right team in order, where if you were needed to get in touch with somebody, they have someone that, like, whether it's an assistant or a manager, and then that's getting figured out without the athlete, not saying not involved, but at least they have it handled on the back end where, you know, you don't want to miss any deadlines. So
when
you're calling us out, but you're calling us out in a good way.
Yeah, and it's all good. And really it's kind of a lesson too, because look, you know, people will put up with that when you're hot. You know what I mean? To a degree. And I'm not saying that's us, because we're in it for the long haul, and I'm definitely in it for the long haul. But you know, look, 5 years after you retire, and you know, you're still kind of being dismissive to people in business that are, you know, trying to do the right thing in your business, that could just turn out the wrong way, depending on, you know, who you're dealing with. So I would say, you know, just for my advice to athletes is, you know, be attentive in the right way, and be on time and stuff like that. Like, those little things make a difference. You know, like if I came on your podcast 30 minutes late, you know, you wouldn't be happy about that, you know, but I make sure that, you know, I'm on time for stuff. And if I say I'm going to call at a certain time, I call, you know, and vice versa. I know athlete schedules are crazy and all that stuff, but those little things do make a difference in the business world. And especially post-retirement, when you're going to be, and a lot of athletes are going to be doing business, you know, those, you kind of want to break those bad habits early on.
No, you can't. No, you couldn't have said it better. I think what you said is very important, especially for the athletes that are done playing, because performance equals tolerance. And there's a new batch of hot athletes that are taking the limelight. So you are what you are your word. Character matters, reputation matters. And if you really want to say you want to do something, there's power in the follow-up. So I think that's really important what you said. And I think it's really valuable for any athlete or anyone in general that's listening, you know, around how to be a good businessman, but also just a good individual.
Yep, no doubt.
So let's get into the money talk, you know, specific to money management. Obviously, you deal with taxes, you deal with helping people minimize how much they're paying in taxes, you know, making sure they stay out of IRS's way, you know, Uncle Sam sees everything. But when it comes to, you know, money management, do you have any advice for them, for people listening?
Yeah, I mean, money management isn't really, you know, that much something that we, you know, we involve ourselves in. But something I would say that I've seen, I kind of use my experience with the successful people that we deal with, is they make their money work. And I know you probably heard this over again, but man, they make their money work for them, you know, and their money is not sitting in a savings account making 0.0001%. You know, per month on something. It's in vehicles, it's in investments, it's spread over all different, you know, kinds of things. And some of it's not going to work, and some of it is. I had a very successful VC guy that I trust, as far as his you know, his acumen and his track record. And he told me that with VCs, you got to kind of account, you got to break it in thirds. He said 33% of investments aren't going to work. 33% of VC investments are going to break even, and 33% are going to hit big. If you're good at what you're doing, you know, that's kind of how he viewed it. And, but he said the 33% that hit big, they're going to 8X. Yeah, they're going to 10X.
Make up for.
Exactly. Your 33% that fail, that's just a 1X fail. But your 33% that hits big, that's a 10X win. Or and your 33% is going to break even. It's going to break even, obviously. So, you know, that's something that I kind of took, and I kind of take these little gems and kind of impart it in my personal investments and finances and things like that. That's been one of the beautiful things about, you know, being in the sports business world now, is that you can kind of, if you're paying attention, you can kind of soak up different things of what works and kind of impart that in your own, you know, in a much lower tax bracket, but impart that in your own experience. Say, okay, I'm going to, you know, this person might've did that with, you know, with 200,000, I might do it for 10,000, you know what I mean? Or I might do it for 15,000, you know, whatever, in a much smaller tax bracket, but I'm going to make it work. You know, I see that strategy. I'm like, okay, I see that. That's smart. I'm going to pick that up. So that was something I learned is to kind of on that VC space. Cause I've actually started getting involved personally, on the VC side within the last, say 18 months or so, you know, and kind of realizing that, you know, the wins definitely overshadow the losses if you're with the right group of people and you know, they have an eye for this stuff and they know what they're doing.
No, I love that. And when I first heard that quote, like a great VC is bad in 300, and you're thinking of it like, so they miss seven, or not miss seven, but they're not hitting, like, so it's
they're
like,
not hitting out the parts, you know, they're only hitting out the part 3 times out of 10.
And that makes is good, but that's strictly for alternative investments. And, you know, definitely consult with your financial team if you're looking to get into the VC space or any space. But I think that's a great, that's great information that people don't know. Like when it comes to VC, it's a different level versus when you're just focusing strictly on personal finance. When it's taxes, it's different levels based on how much money you're making. So all this information that you're sharing and that's available is important for each athlete to build their own financial portfolio or financial playbook. But changing gears real quick as we close, what is some advice that you would have for building a network as an athlete? You're someone that's very well connected, well respected. How did you go about it, and how do you maintain relationships to build your business, your book of business with your CPA?
Yeah. One thought that immediately came to mind, and this worked for me in the reporter space, and I just kind of translated that in the business space, is, treat everybody with a high level of respect, because you just never know. People level up all the time. And I'll give you a personal story. One gentleman, I was actually speaking to him last week. One gentleman that I had met, I was in training camp one time at, I don't want to say the team, I might give it away. I was at training camp one time, and in the NFL, no one really talks to the scouts, especially the lower level scouts. Those are people that are grinding, you know, they might be making, you know, I don't know, 40,000 a year, 50,000 a year, something like that. They're grinding and you know, just trying to work their ways up to being, you know, a high level GM or, you know, stuff like that. Eventually, a lot of them are in their 20s, traveling across the country 3-4 days a week to these colleges, scouting the players and stuff like that. But there's one guy in training camp. It was a low level scout. And, you know, I was a young reporter in my lower 20s, mid 20s, and great guy. We just kind of hit it off and just kept in touch, you know, over the years. And 8 years later, that scout became a GM. Of another team. And because of our relationship from when no one talked to him 8 years ago, now everybody wants to talk to him, but he remembered me, because I was the guy in training camp that, you know, we just having regular, normal conversation, treating him with respect and everything, where most reporters would just ignore him. They're trying to talk to the hotshot coach or, you know, the current GM, you know, and I built a rapport with him to where 8 years later, that really, you know, helped me professionally, because now I had an in with, you know, a GM of one of the 32 NFL teams, and, you know, that helped in a lot of ways. And, And so, you know, so I kind of took that business to just treat everybody the same and everybody with the same level of respect, because you just don't know, you know, who you're talking to. The person you're talking to today could be, you know, the next big, you know, whatever, you know, that you may that could help you, you know, down the road, or you can help them. Down the road. So I've always tried to be helpful. I've always tried to be, you know, open and just genuinely who you are. And that's another thing. Always be genuine to who you are. As some people are going to like you or dislike you no matter what. At least have them like or dislike who you naturally are. If you're trying to be something else or be someone else and have them like that, you know, something else that you're not, that you're being unnatural about, then you're going to have to kind of keep up that act the entire time. And that's exhausting, man. Yeah, that's tiring trying to be something that you're not. And you know, so I kind of took some lessons from sports reporting, you know, into the business world to just be genuine all the time of who you are and just always be respectful to people, because you never know, you know, who's going to level up. I mean, we've had just a quick, you know, business story. We had a minor leaguer that came in a few years back, very, very young, you know, came from South American country. Again, I don't want to say the name because some people may be able to end up putting it together, and wasn't making much of anything in terms of income, minor league salary. You know, income minor league baseball players make. And, you know, we treated him the same, treated him as if he was, you know, and same as an all-star baseball player, what have you. And that player sped through the minor leagues, really took off, went to the majors in like a record time, and became a star player, you know, for that team, signed this huge contract. And that player remained loyal to us, to our firm, because, you know, when he was a whatever 19-year-old teenager that wasn't making much, you know, we did his taxes and things like that. And now he's a, you know, multi-time all-star at the major league level. And, you know, he stayed loyal to us because we, you know, we treated him with that respect. People remember that. I think those kind of things are kind of missing in business, especially now in the social media age, and where, you know, a lot of communication is through texting and stuff like that, to where just that personable aspect, you know, like me and you meeting face to face. I think that really helped versus us just meeting on a, you know, a phone call or something like that, to where, okay, you know, I got to look you in the eye and we got to meet in person. And now, you know, we can do these things, you know, 2 weeks later. So yeah, I'd say those are kind of the things. Just remember that, like, people currency is very valuable. You know, your network people currency is sometimes more valuable than, you know, than money, because you never know. Like, I'm fortunately for me, I'm able to reach many different people in different walks of life, to where, you know, I can help, you know, I can help a lot of people. So, you know, so I kind of use up a lot of my favors to help other people. You know, instead of like using up my favors to kind of help me, and that's kind of really worked. I kind of feel like that stuff comes back to you, you know, through karma, nice, through the universe, or just through people realizing, hey, I really appreciate you helping me out. So, those are the kind of things that work for me. It doesn't work for everybody. Those are what works for me.
No, I love that. I love that mentality. When you give, you're ultimately going to get, but you do it with not just because, oh, I know if I give, I'm going to get something back. You do it because you're genuinely helping somebody else, putting them on the platform, and it's going to return. You're going to get the favor return. So with that being said, James, I want to thank you so much for your time. How can people connect with you if they want to connect with you? How can they get in touch with Oedipus? Sorry, I pronounced that wrong.
Adeptus, yep.
Adeptus. Yep. That's a tongue twister for me. Adeptus.
Yeah. It's not the usual name, I understand.
How can people get in touch with Adeptus if they, you know, tax season's around the corner, if they want to get right, you know, what are some ways they can get in touch with you?
Well, they can reach out to me directly. You know, my email is jwalker@adeptuscpas.com. Our website is adeptuscpas.com. And also I'm on social media. I know a lot of people are on social media. My Twitter handle is @JamesWalkerNFL, you know, on Twitter and Facebook as well. But Twitter is a better way to get a hold of me. So if you email me, you know, I can share my phone number and things like that. I'm not going to share my phone number. I don't want my phone ringing at, you know, all times of the night. But just email me or hit me up on social media, and I'll definitely respond.
Yeah, most definitely. And yeah, he is quite the Twitter follower. Got a large database, but he's always makes time for people that are intentional about connecting with him. So we're going to have his information in the show notes. Tax season is around the corner, so make sure you get right with the Adeptus CPAs. And James, thank you so much for taking the time. It really means a lot. And I'm sure we'll be talking offline, but if anyone else wants to connect, make sure you guys check out his information below.
Thanks for having me on. I love what you're doing, Amobi. Keep up the good work, man.
Yes, sir. I really appreciate you.
Thank you for tuning in to this podcast episode. For more information, check out the show notes and go to our website, www.afrugalathlete.com. If you enjoyed, please leave a favorable rating and review and share and subscribe. Thank you so much.